Amen. Thank you so much, Peggy and Sally, for wonderful readings today. Choir, it's wonderful to have you back, and a really lovely anthem today. I love the sweeping dynamics and kind of feeling it build and go up together as God's presence is entering us. And I look forward to more of having you back in the coming month and year. So as I mentioned in our children's message earlier, we're coming out of the Christmas season. Epiphany was on Friday, and that's normally kind of considered the end of like the 12 days of Christmas sort of thing. And if you remember, the Epiphany helps us remember the Magi story, and we looked at that with special focus on Christmas Eve this year, including more of it than maybe we are used to talking about on Christmas Eve, where we saw not only the Magi come, but be reminded that their encounter, first thinking that they would find the Messiah with Herod, the king at the time, and then went to go find Jesus, sparked Herod's jealousy and rage and desire for power. And so then Jesus and his family needed to flee to Egypt after they had this encounter. And Herod lashed out at other children at the time. And so seeing Jesus on the run at the time of Christmas might seem defeatist, but that story is really important for us because it shows us what God really cares about based on the things that we see God do and not do, and how God came from those available options to bring salvation to earth. Would it be through the normal power channels like Herod and Caesar that were about mistreating people and coming to power by conquering and oppressing? Or would it be about something different, even if that meant going out into the wilderness and connecting with people who were displaced? So in the next 2 weeks, as I thought about like, oh yeah, we're looking at sort of some Christmas passages, but more than maybe we're used to seeing, I thought it could be good to get some more bonus Christmas passages. Ones that, because they are part of Jesus' early life, before his main ministry, when he grows up, but not immediately adjacent to the birth of Jesus, we often don't get to hear these passages and reflect on what they can mean for us. And actually, we should remember that this first story we heard today, this is from the book of Luke. The story of the Magi is from the book of Matthew. Each book of the Gospels is a little bit different. And they weren't trying to just sort of tell a journalistic report of the story of Jesus. They were coming out of specific communities that they wanted to give messages that were especially relevant to for those communities' context. So that's good that we have those four Gospels. They're all a little bit different, but sometimes recognizing how the stories might fit together takes a little reflection, and that's okay. So this dedication story at the temple almost certainly happened, just so we know, before the Magi actually came to visit, that they probably came after Jesus was a few weeks to even a few months old. We know that in part because Herod, based on his interaction with the Magi, decided he needed to go after all toddlers, essentially, in the area of Bethlehem. You would have thought if the Magi had come earlier that Herod would have probably been able to say, who's the like one baby that was born that one night that the Magi talked about? Or, you know, maybe a couple, but he cast the net pretty wide because there's probably, based on how they came, time that he would need to do that. So that's kind of the context that we're coming into, but we see here again another encounter between Jesus and people that we might not normally expect. So we'll get to see, same with the Magi, ways that we can find God's values and priorities coming into the world. And that can help us better understand how God continues to act in our own lives, in our context today, and how God can guide our lives based on those same values and priorities. Again, we can remember that the big point of the Magi story is that it grounds us in this idea that God was coming not through the existing, expected, earthly power structures when Jesus was going to come transform the world. The reign of God, the arrival of Jesus, is not about picking favorites in our own swirling efforts to dominate each other like earthly kings or Caesars do. But instead, Jesus arriving is an invitation to everyone to learn and live out salvation together as sojourners. So Jesus is not about going through the palace, but about going to the desert and Egypt and connecting with those people who were like slaves being free from oppression instead. And this highlights a contrast between what we might be tempted to expect from God and what God actually does seek to do. And to help us think about this, if we can bring up the slide, we can think of this as being a clash between empire, like Herod and Caesar, and empowering. Because Jesus went to Egypt, because Jesus goes to people like Anna and Simeon, we know that God does not connect with the empire forces like Herod and Caesar, but instead connects with the displaced, with the overlooked. And those are the people that God then moves to empower. We can keep this contrast in mind and keep learning about God's priorities from these dedication encounters when Jesus' family takes him to the temple and he gets to meet people like Simeon and Anna. It's really helpful because we, in fact, might ourselves be able to relate to Simeon and Anna's perspective and how they felt displaced. We often ourselves can have times when we might say, all right, there's this new thing coming on. And if that's happening, if God is moving in this way, does that mean that if I'm not automatically part of that, I'm not like Jesus or Jesus' age or Jesus' circumstance, am I just going to be passed by? Am I at risk of not finding a place or being considered unimportant just because I'm in a different stage or circumstance? But Mary and Joseph dedicating Jesus to the temple is an act of God stepping into the world and making a place not only for these new things that God will do, but also for new expressions of traditions and people's expectations. We can see during this story that there are a number of steps that Jesus goes through in the encounters with Simeon and Anna, and that gives us examples of this contrast between empire and empowering, and how that can be meaningful in lives of people like Simeon and Anna, and therefore can be meaningful in our lives too, in whatever position that we have, and where we can maybe feel like they felt themselves. The first thing I want us to notice with that today is that God chose through Jesus to participate in some expectations and traditions of the people at the time, because we saw in the story that Jesus is meeting the expectations and traditions of the law of Moses by being dedicated in the temple. Now, this might seem like a small thing, but it's important because so much of the ministry of Jesus eventually ends up being about challenging the law, about challenging how the law ends up being used to control people, to shame people, to frame some people as worthy and some people as unworthy. So Jesus' arrival reconciles us to God through relationship where we can't live up to the law, and also where the law helps to fail to keep us as people reconciled with each other and connected to God. So Jesus is doing something beyond the law, and yet Jesus is willing to enter the law as God in this dedication at the beginning of his life. So Jesus is entering a world, we can see, where people of empire like Herod and Caesar feel like they can use the law as their own way to act like gods over others. They use their authority in the law and the way that they manipulate it to control people, to posture some people as great and some people as less than human. And they can just say, well, if it's legal, it must be good. I've made it legal, and therefore, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's fair or just or not, it must be good. But in contrast to the empire, the God of empowering, despite being the creator of everything, enters into the very conditions of the human law. And by fulfilling that law, takes on a position where God can challenge the misuse of law by the empire and restore an expectation that our systems of living together are supposed to be about protecting each other, about creating possibility for even the most lowly, like babies from Bethlehem, or like vulnerable conquered people like Simeon, who wait for generations to experience God's justice and freedom instead of Rome's violence and dehumanization. And Simeon recognizes who Jesus is and what God is doing in breaking into the world as a baby. And this brings celebration from him that God is not just fulfilling and transforming the law, but he also evokes the prophets and gives his own prophetic declaration. So God is also fulfilling and transcending the hopes of prophets and visionaries that are, again, part of a continued tradition that God is gathering together, both those who are going to be part of something new and those who have been a part of something all along. If you didn't notice some of the lines mirroring each other, our Old Testament reading today from Isaiah 42 is evoked and quoted by Simeon in his own blessing and declaration about God in when he meets Jesus. Again, we should remember that Simeon's world is one where the vision and values that prophets declare of what is true and what brings saving life are being wrongly claimed and corrupted by people in certain positions of power, by the empire. On Christmas Eve, if you were here, I also read a proclamation that was made about Augustus Caesar around the time of Jesus' birth. And these proclamations about Caesar sounded a lot like what we are used to hearing about Jesus in the Christmas story, what we're used to hearing in the declarations of God's prophets expressing hope about God's coming Messiah even hundreds of years before Jesus was born. These proclamations claimed that Caesar was like a god because he had brought good news and hope and prosperity and peace to the vast Roman Empire. But of course, we have to remember that that absence of conflict called peace was happening at the time because Caesar had conquered and killed and pushed aside all of these nations all around the empire, and that there were Roman soldiers through all of these countries crucifying all the people who wouldn't stay in line. The prosperity that was going to Rome that was celebrated was coming from taxes and resources being taken from all of these conquered people. And then they were being bled dry by greed and injustice to make others rich. See, an empire is invested in proclaiming and prophesying as much as it can how wonderful and worthy it is. We have peace. We have prosperity. We're the most amazing. We're powerful because we're right. But empires don't care about actually living that out. They just care about bullying everyone into saying that they agree. Yes, this empire is pretty great. Please don't hurt me. Excuse me. Simeon, on the other hand, knows and finds hope that in Jesus we see the God of empowering being different. By coming as Jesus, God is not just full of beautiful words about what is right and then pushing us around to agree. God comes to join Simeon, Anna, and others who are overlooked and mistreated, including us, when we experience pain and loss from what is wrong in the world. And not only empathizes with us, but stands up to the wrong things, the oppression of empire, and takes the full cost, even to death, upon himself. And then emerges victorious with a different loving, serving, transforming rule that no empire will ultimately be able to stop, overcome, or outlast. We can take a lot of inspiration and hope, by the way, in the verses from Isaiah that Simeon referenced, because they give this picture of what empowering God looks like, what our lives are like. It's words, but it's also what God will fulfill of what's right, and when things are right, what it looks like and feels like. It's a beautiful picture of the fullness of empowering God, moving in ways that empires will not do. I want us to notice that Isaiah uses a very unique and compelling metaphor at the center of this passage. I think Sally even kind of did this pause of like, huh, that's a little bit different. And it's not an image we see a lot in some of the other prophetic passages about the Messiah. I think it probably stood out to Simeon for a reason, though, based on his circumstances, being at the end of his life, waiting for God to arrive. It was the image of islands. Did you hear that? Islands will find hope in God's ways of salvation and empowering. That might seem a little bit strange. We can remember in sort of prophetic and poetic imagery of the time that islands are a metaphor because in that culture, the seas represented chaos and tumultuousness. So they're often talking about, you know, seas raging, essentially, and that we need to have that calmed. And so islands then will evoke this sense of experiencing isolation with a sea of chaos swirling around you. But Isaiah promises that God's empowering will bring peace and connection. And this brings us to the actual relational connection that then God makes to Simeon and Anna and folks like them, folks like us, by fulfilling the law and the prophets, going to the temple as Jesus with the family. Here are islands within the seas of chaos. Jesus arrives and will bring connection and calm and peace. The verses today show key things in the life of Simeon and in the life of Anna, but show how they may have themselves felt like islands in this chaos. what it would have meant to encounter Jesus in the midst of that. And then therefore know that they are included in God's salvation movement on earth, even if it is just for a brief overlap of time at the end of their lives and the beginning of Jesus' life. We're told that a significant part of Simeon's life is waiting for the consolation or the peace, the restoration of Israel. And that has had him serving God continuously in the temple. We can hear in this connection to the consolation of Israel, how that was so important to him, that Simeon was deeply in touch with the suffering of his people at the hands of the Roman Empire that had conquered them, and the empires for hundreds of years that had been doing the same thing before that. And not only is he in touch with their suffering and their desire for transformation, but he is also in touch with that hope that another way of life could be possible. And he has that true not only for God's people in Israel, but even for the whole world, for other conquered people around the empire at the time, because we see him invoking God's salvation for Gentiles in his blessing, as well as for God's people, Israel. And the temple to go connect with God might make a lot of sense, but if you're waiting for the consolation of Israel, the temple would also be a difficult place to be, to seek the salvation and solutions for injustice, because the temple was often the center of conflict amongst God's own people about how will we be God's people, how will this restoration come, what is the best way for us to do to find thriving even in the midst of suffering. You see, the temple would be the place that violent rebellion started against the Romans in people's efforts to keep the temple pure. But at the same time, people in authority, like the priests and other law authorities, legal scholars at the temple colluded with Rome because they were trying to keep the temple calm and safe. And then there'd be conflict between these people that were all part of God's nation, but that some who said, we need to kick all of these Gentiles out violently, and the people who said, if we're violent, they'll just come and crush us, and we need to do whatever we can, even if it's compromising things, to make sure that we don't experience any oppression extra on what we're already having. And so, when we feel caught up in the middle of a swirling world with lots of competing ideas about the right way to move forward, the right way to get advantage, and if we wonder where our place is, wanting God to show up and bring real transformation, we can relate to Simeon. When we feel that sense of swirling chaos, that's what Simeon was going through too. And we can know that God doesn't just leave us alone there, but instead God shows up and invites us to find joy and give blessing to the empowering way that God will connect us as humble people. God will connect with us even when we are having trouble. The big part of what we see a glimpse of in Anna's life is her being a widow, and Jesus steps into her life in that context. Now, in that culture, it would have, by the way, been very unusual for Anna to end up on her own in the temple. It would have been expected that after that happens, and probably, by the way, she got married as a teenager, 7 years with husband, so probably in her early to mid-20s is when she started being a widow. So that's probably 60-some years or so that this had been going on for her. So it would have been expected when that happens, though, that a woman would be taken care of, but sort of kept cloistered by either her husband's family, maybe his father or brother, or someone takes her in but kind of leaves her to the side, or her own family, her father or any brothers that she had would take her and again, sort of keep her to the side probably at best. And the fact that she is instead in the temple could mean a couple things. One could be that she didn't have that family. And so maybe she didn't have any brother or siblings. Maybe the family was not very wealthy, so they weren't able to take care of extra people. Maybe they'd even rejected her for some reason. And so she could go to the temple to find support through charitable care and could get by that way. However, it could also mean that she went to the temple because she was choosing to step away from a role where she would just sort of be put away for the rest of her life. She could be in the temple because she says, this is a place I can be more fully myself. I can have a chance to connect and serve God, and I can find connection, maybe even in passing, in serving those that come in and out of the temple for our holidays and for their own attempts to connect with God. And so when we feel like support systems are missing for us, or that all anyone sees for us is to kind of fade away, but we hope for more connection, We hope for more of a chance to make an impact. We hope for more of a chance to create blessing and possibility for those around us and for those that would come after us. We can relate to Anna. And we can know that God will show up in those feelings and circumstances too, honoring and encouraging those impulses in us, giving us a place in God's family that will draw others in. See, in their age and circumstance, like Simeon and Anna, empire is happy to leave people like them behind because it only cares about what value can be extracted and from people to keep the empire moving forward, even if it runs them over like a train on the tracks. But empowering God leaves no one behind. Because God isn't about extracting value. God is about blessing and growing the humble worthiness that can't be denied in anyone because God created it in us in the first place. Because of this, that means God also does something that the empire is never very good at. Not only does God leave no one behind, but God has no one stay where they are. We know that Jesus gives salvation, that transforms, that grows, that connects us with others. And we can see that Simeon and Anna, even in their life stage, even in that circumstance, have new things open to them in their encounter with Jesus. They're able to go and continue to share this encounter that they had with these new things that God is doing with other people of all ages around them and see how they might become a part of it. There are plenty of ways that we can wonder in the church or in our world, because things are swirling and changing around us, will we find a place? Will we end up pushed to the side or passed by or forgotten? So we can call out and ask God, what does it look like for us to find God connecting with me while others might be having things swirling or passing me by? Can God come to me just like Jesus came in the temple to Simeon and Anna? What does it look like for me to tap into God's empowering instead of just being swept along in the empire's control games and discouragement? Here's a few things that I think that we can try to do together to put ourselves before empowering God like Simeon and Anna did before Jesus, to experience this blessing and to lay a foundation for all that Jesus will do throughout his life and therefore in moving in our lives over time, no matter what stage or circumstance we're in. First off, we can know that we should be about participating. Even if we feel like we're not very important or we're at a stage where other people don't see as much value in us, God wants to use whatever we have to offer, including the things that others try to tell us are not good enough. But as we remember that God wants to use us exactly where we are and exactly with who we are, no matter what that is, we can remember that God also wants to use what others have, wherever they're at, whatever circumstance that they are in. And so that can help us remember to leave room to work together with all of God's family so everyone is participating in that way. Similarly, we want to be about persevering. Because empowering is not a thing that just happens in one moment and then we're done and we're just kind of sitting around coasting. It's a process where we can always continue and have this keep happening, which can feel exciting, but sometimes we have to admit, we'll say to ourselves, you know what? It would be easier if I could just like have things be exactly as they are right now. Stay where I'm thinking now, stay where I'm used to now, stay what I know now. That feels pretty good. But we can remember in persevering and staying faithful in our identity as disciples first before God, as learners, that we don't want to control God. We want to continue to discover all of the ways that God is moving, even if it's unexpected. And then lastly, we can be about passing things along. It is hopeful to know that God's inviting us into something that's bigger than any one of us. It's beyond us. It's powerful. It's amazing. It goes beyond our limitations. But sometimes that can be exciting, and other times it can feel like, that means it's something that's not mine. I can't control it. I can't hold it. I can't be the one that steers it exactly where I like. I'm not fully in control. Can't it just be about my lane? But hopefully we do celebrate the salvation life that is God's first and not ours. We get to participate in it. And so we can receive it more fully with open hands. We can keep sharing it and passing it on to others, confident that God is inviting us to contribute our own way, but also then we can feel comfortable to let other people contribute their own peace as God leads them and have it flow between us and them in whatever time and circumstance God knows is best, even if that means that somebody will be doing something different than what we have been doing. There are so many beautiful visions of what we can experience from salvation life because of our empowering God as we try to live together. And we can be excited about the things that God will bring into our lives through that empowering. And even when we feel like we're in circumstances like Simeon and Anna, maybe especially when we feel like we're in circumstances like Simeon and Anna. And I know I personally look forward to seeing how we can discover these images and these experiences together in the upcoming year. So as we try to lay ourselves before God that way, we can start by dedicating ourselves, like Jesus was dedicated at the temple, at God's table this morning for communion.